Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday the 27th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom Morgan. Tonight on the show, we peer back at the first Mardi Gras protest 40 years ago, as we look past that night and the continuing activism and protests we don't hear about. We head to Tel Aviv for Tel Aviv Pride and hear the diversity of what Pride means in a country whose government used the LGBTI community to improve its reputation while doing nothing to make their lives better. And we find out how you can nominate someone to have a Pride seat dedicated to them in Sydney's inner west.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Sunday night marked the 40th anniversary of the first Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, a protest which sparked a change in the fight for LGBTI rights and equality in Australia. Over the weekend, talks, celebrations and even a reenactment took place in honour of this mark in our queer history. But we don't often hear about what happened next. As part of Joy and the Victorian AIDS Council series Well, 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 Caleb Hawke looks back on the history of the VAC as he speaks to members of the community and looks at moments in our history that have changed and defined who we are today. Now on The Informer, you're going to hear excerpts from interviews with Bruce Parnell and Adam Carr that didn't make it to air, as they talk about the protest action that happened 1 month after Mardi Gras in protest of the arrests. Adam was one of the founding members of the Victorian AIDS Council and was prominent in gay media from the late 70s through to the 80s. Bruce was the VAC's first manager of education and now works in international health initiatives in developing countries through the Burnett Institute.
Out of the bars, into the streets. Out of the bars, into the streets. Stop police attacks on gays, women and blacks. Stop police attacks on gays, women and blacks. Stop police attacks. Come on, Gary.
My partner Lee, the one that I talked about who died of HIV in 1992, he was one of the people at the very first Mardi Gras in 1978. He had previously lived in Sydney and he'd gone up there for that. And he was with two friends who were not gay. They were there because they were trade unionists who supported human rights and difference and diversity. And they hated the police, of course. And the police in Sydney were not like the police these days. Even in Sydney, they're much better. But then the police in Sydney hated the gay community. So Lee was one of the first three people arrested. Then there was a conference in August that year, a national homosexual conference. In the days when we used to have student unions, the Australian Union of Students used to host every year a conference in a different state every year. That year it was in Sydney and it was over a weekend. And so on the Sunday afternoon, a beautiful sunny day in Sydney, they said, we're going to have a protest demonstration about what happened at the Mardi Gras. And I was at that demonstration and I thought, this is safe. It's a Sunday afternoon. The organisers said, we're going to march along the footpath towards Taylor Square. And so you thought, well, we can do this. And we got to Taylor Square about a block before. We were surrounded by police. You could see on every road, and that intersection has about six different ways of getting there. Everyone was blocked by a line of police. There were police cars and an announcement, if you do not disperse, you'll be arrested. And someone, it's interesting, we're on a radio station, community radio station at ANU in Canberra, Ian Malloy was taping it as media, and his tape was used in court as evidence The police said, if you do not disperse, we will arrest you. And 7 seconds later, he said, I order you to arrest these people. We walked, I remember being hand in hand with Michael Hurley, and we just walked across the road, and we all went dispersed across the road, but in couples, very calmly. And I remember a policeman putting his arm on my shoulder, saying, you're under arrest. And I looked at him, and he looked at me like he couldn't believe this either. And I was locked up then. They arrested 111 of us at that demonstration. So this wasn't the first Mardi Gras, but because I was at that, I'm allowed to call myself a 78.
Oh,
apparently.
It's still 78. It's still 78.
Yeah.
And at that point, the Darlinghurst Police Station is right there off of Taylor Square, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where you guys were all taken?
No, we were taken, some were taken there, and we were taken to a central police station. And
okay.
To be honest, I have no idea where that was. I was 20 years old in a strange city thinking, my God, what's going to happen now?
20 years old.
Yeah. And looking back, that had a huge impact on my life.
Yeah.
Huge. And that was well before AIDS. So then you spend the next few years recovering, being convinced with our friends we are all right, and then along came AIDS. And
I mean,
it was a strange time to grow up.
The National Homosexual Conference that year was held at Paddington Town Hall,
mm-hmm.
And this was a few months after the arrest at Mardi Gras, so it was decided to have a protest march about those arrests and the police violence from Paddington Town Hall down to Oxford Street.
Okay.
And it was quite a big march. It was a couple of thousand people.
Oh, wow.
And we got to Taylor Square, and the police had surrounded the entire square, so that it made a cul-de-sac, so the march came into the square but couldn't get out again.
Yep.
And they then told everyone they had sort of 2 minutes to disperse or we were all breaking the law, which nobody heard, of course.
Right.
And then they started arresting people.
Yep.
And they had horses and the full deal. And dozens, I don't remember now how many people were arrested, but it was a lot.
Yep.
And I and a couple of friends were there, and a couple of my friends were arrested. I wasn't. It was just a matter of random luck whether you got arrested or not.
Yep.
And then we had to spend the rest of the evening bailing everybody out of the Darlinghurst Police Station.
Right.
Which in the days, this was on the weekend, the banks were closed. In the days before ATMs, you had to have cash, which meant we had to go and collect cash from all around the community to bail all these people out. And the complication was the police would only allow them to be bailed out by name. And so you had to know who was in the police station before you could bail them out. And because so many people had given false names, it took all night to get all the people out of the police station. And there was more violence and bashings on that occasion as well. So that was a real initiation for 22 or something at that time, a real initiation into the real world of street confrontations and politics.
And they're being arrested on what grounds?
Well, I forget exactly what they were charged with now, probably, resist. It was sort of self-perpetuating. The police said, this is an illegal demo, you've all got to go. And when they didn't, you were then charged with participating in illegal demo or obstructing police or resisting arrest or whatever charges they wanted to make up, really.
So wasn't an illegal demo?
Well, I think the police had the power to say it was, yes.
Yeah, even if you had a permit.
I think so. I wasn't one of the organisers, I'm not sure quite what the legal position was, but a lot of people were charged. And, of course, and then all their names and addresses were published in the Sydney Morning Herald, as you may remember, which was a big issue of itself at that time. So it became second only to the actual original Mardi Gras itself.
Yeah.
It was one of the sort of formational events of the gay politics at that time.
And I suppose that would add, I guess, I guess in a way, for those people that it's a bit of a test of your mettle, so to speak, but would be a very motivating thing once you're kind
of
part of that process.
Yeah, it was, yes. I mean, you saw the reality of gay oppression, as we sort of called it at that time.
Yep.
The power of the state and the power of the media was certainly brought down with a pretty heavy hand at that time when it was a perfectly peaceful march down, from Paddington to Oxford Street. It was hardly, the revolution happening. If the police had handled it and told intelligently, it would have all passed off very pleasantly. But that was the mood of the times. They were probably under orders from the state government, I don't know, to sort of not let this happen. So, yes, then that was one of the motivations then for us to start a gay publication in Melbourne, because the only gay, national gay publication at that time was Campaign in Sydney, which we all thought was very frivolous and silly. And we in Melbourne, of course, were all very serious political activists, as Alison's probably told you. And so we thought we can do better than that. And that was, it was those events in 1978 that led to that, which led to then my career in gay media.
You can hear more from Bruce Parnell and Adam Carr by checking out Joy Podcasts from Well, 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 as Caleb Hawke looks back on the history of the Victorian AIDS Council and the activism and historical moments that helped shape the changes and equal rights we have today.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Pride celebrations in Tel Aviv drew record crowds this year. Like on a number of matters, the country is divided. Many see Israel as an oasis for the LGBTI community in the Middle East, while many others believe the government uses the LGBTI community to improve its reputation while doing nothing to make their lives better. Ruby Schwartz was at the parade and spoke to a group of people who blockaded the protest, referring to the parade as pinkwashing, as well as other diverse opinions from Tel Aviv we don't often get to hear.
Hundreds of thousands of people flooded the streets of Tel Aviv for the Gay Pride Parade last week. The streets were covered in rainbow flags, sparkles, and lots of exposed, sweaty bodies dancing under the blazing sun. Tourists came from all over the world to celebrate what was the city's 20th annual Gay Pride Parade. Many could barely contain their excitement.
Oh my God, it's the most exciting day of being here in Tel Aviv. I just feel so fortunate to be part of it. There's so much love in the air and there's just so much happiness here, and it's just such great fun.
It's surreal. It's amazing to be here. I've never been at such a big pride. I've been to pride in Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Jamaica, and this is the biggest one I've been to. So excited to be here.
Oh my God, I'm super excited. Yeah. It's my first time in Tel Aviv to Pride.
You can tell.
It's like, for real, my pussy's just on a hyper mode, honey, right? Literally, my pussy's like taking like a whole different world on right now. I love a dick. Give me a dick. Yeah. Give me a dick.
It's the largest parade of its kind in the Middle East, and it's only getting more popular. There were 250,000 attendees at this year's parade, 50,000 more than last year. And it seems to be contagious. Chen Arieli, chairperson of the Aguda, Israel's national LGBT task force, told me that the parades are popping up all over the country.
This year we have a record number of pride events all over Israel. Last week we had the first and historical parade in Kfar Saba, which is a small suburb outside of Tel Aviv. And our message now is you can be whomever you are, wherever you are. You don't need to move yourself to the center of Israel. You can be openly proud and gay in Haifa, in Beersheba, in Elat, in Kiryat Shmona, in everywhere.
But it's not all cause for excitement and celebration. As Chen explains, while better than many neighboring countries, the LGBT community in Israel has very few rights.
In general, Israel is a good place for LGBTQI community to live in, especially when you compare it to Russia, to Chechnya, to Iran, to Iraq. But having said that, we need to realize that we also have none of our rights written in the Israeli books of law. We do not have any official recognition of gay families. We do not have any official recognition of gay marriage.
The LGBT community in Israel does have limited rights. They cannot marry, they cannot adopt. And just last year, the welfare ministry called LGBT families irregulars who should not be allowed to adopt children. This is in spite of Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, making claims to support the LGBT community.
There's only one state in the Middle East that welcomes gays.
This was him addressing an American Jewish committee gathering just last week.
This is the one place in the Middle East where gays walk proudly on a Tel Aviv beach and participate here in our Knesset deliberations, in our government.
The incongruity between the government's claims to support the LGBT community and the rights afforded to the community came to a head for Chen before the 2016 Tel Aviv parade.
Actually, 2 years ago, we read an article that the tourism ministry in Tel Aviv is going to spend 11 million shekels of promoting gay tourism to Tel Aviv. And we were like kind of shocked by it. I had smoke coming out of my ears because we knew that we get fundings from the government, all 17 organizations together, and less than 2 million shekels, like 1.8 million shekels. So it kind of was horrible to know that gap between the money that the government is willing to spend on just, you know, bragging about us and not having actually anything to do with that because it's our work.
While some of the tourism budget was later allocated to other LGBT services, in Chen's view, it wasn't enough.
I don't think we get enough. I don't think we get enough support. We are equal citizens in the terms of our debts to the, our duties to the country. We serve in the army, we pay taxes, but we're not recognized as families, we're not recognized in marriage. You know, whatever is natural to heterosexual citizens is not natural for us. So we're equals in our duties to the country, but we're not equal in our rights.
By 1 p.m., the parade turned the corner to travel its final stretch down the Tayelet, the Tel Aviv promenade that runs along the Mediterranean Sea. People were dancing, celebrating, and following the dazzling floats along the coast. A little further on, the sounds and colours started to change. A big group dressed all in pink were holding placards saying, Ein ke'eva bakivush, there is no pride in occupation.
I'm Zizabel Hawa, I'm a Palestinian from East Jerusalem. We're part of the anti-pinkwashing parade here. Pinkwashing, for whoever doesn't know, is the cynical use of the LGBT community in Israel in order to show off that Israel is a very open-minded country, democratic, accepting, and has human rights, because they have this huge parade, while they're oppressing the basic human rights of millions of Palestinians and denying them, you know, freedom.
There I also met Yael Maron, the editor for Local Call, who was covering the protest. Before I could ask her why the focus on occupation at the Pride Parade, she answered the question herself.
Why talking about occupation in the middle of celebration? And the answer is around solidarity. You have the duty to pass it. You have to remember that, like you know, some of the people that were in solidarity with you might be oppressed. And you know, moving the solidarity and moving this energy from one group to another is a duty.
On the outskirts of the parade, I met up with a few people from Beit Dror, an emergency centre for LGBT youth based in Tel Aviv. I spoke with Adi, who's been volunteering with the organisation for 3 years, about her thoughts on the Pride Parade.
A lot of people in Israel feel like the government kind of uses Pride and the Tel Aviv environment to like marketing Israel as an open place, which is not always the situation. But when I look at it from my, as a private person, I'm thinking about somebody who's like 14, 16, and he feel like he doesn't have anybody in the world like him. He feel like he's weird, he's something wrong with him. And then he came to Tel Aviv and he see 100,000 of people and they all like him. And I'm thinking like, this is so amazing. And I feel like even if it's politically used for like different things that I'm not always agree with, I still think it's amazing power just to walk with 100 or 1,000 or so many people just like you and feel like, okay, I'm normal.
Part of the Beit Dror group was a 16-year-old boy wearing shorts and a tank top who grew up in the south of Tel Aviv. He told me how lucky he feels to have found his community in Tel Aviv and at Beit Dror, where he is currently housed.
Dror is kind of a bird in Israel. And Beit is home. at the entrance of the building, you can see a sentence. It's written there that every bird can find her nest. And it's like we are all birds and we found our nest.
Heading back into the parade, seeing rainbow flags flying, the pink placards drifting through the crowds and signs demanding equal rights for the LGBT community, it was obvious the gay pride was a window into what is a very complicated, divided society, where occupation pervades every topic and defines people's positions on almost every social issue.
That was Ruby Schwartz from this year's Tel Aviv Pride.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Five Pride seats are set to be installed in Sydney's Inner West and dedicated to Inner West people, groups and organisations that have campaigned for LGBTI rights, and you can have a say in who they are dedicated to. The seats will be set up with dedications at high-profile locations throughout the Inner West Council area, with possible locations including outside Norton Plaza, in front of The Hub on King Street, and outside the library or town hall on Marrickville Road. Dean Arcuri spoke with Teresa Savage from the Inner West Council's LGBTIQ Working Party and asked how the Pride seats came about and how you can nominate someone to be dedicated.
The council accepted a donation of five Pride seats from Street Furniture Australia in recognition of the strong support for LGBTIQ community and the recent marriage equality campaign. And you guys are looking for nominations for who these seats can represent?
Dedicated.
There's the word. Yeah. There's the word.
That's the word, yeah.
How did it come about that these five Pride seats were donated?
Street Furniture Australia approached council with the initiative, so that was pretty good. And they came up with a design. I don't know if you've seen the pretty pictures. They're like a park bench, but each bit of the bench is one of the rainbow colours, and they've got lovely bright pink arms and legs. So that's how it came about. So Street Furniture approached council and made that offer, which we were all very pleased about. I think it's in recognition of the marriage equality campaign, but it's also that the Inner West of Sydney has a really long and significant LGBTIQ history, you know, with some of our oldest organisations like CAMP, you know, the Campaign Against Moral Persecution, the Gay and Lesbian Phone Line, all started in Balmain in Sydney's Inner West in the 70s. And many lesbian organisations founded around here, and Leichhardt, where I live, you know, was commonly known as Dykehardt for many, many years. So, you know, it's a really good opportunity to note all of that history, you know, on our streets and in our outside our shopping centres and so on.
So what's really exciting is that you're looking for people or organisations that would be like to be put forward to be dedicated to one of these seats. Why was that the idea that was put forward for them rather than something independently being decided upon?
You know, everything we do, we try to involve the community and engage with all the LGBTI groups and individuals in our area. So we just felt that instead of us deciding or, you know, it would be a much better process to have people nominate who they think are the people in the who've made the biggest contribution to improving human rights of LGBTIQ people in the Inner West. So it's a way of engaging with people and involving people, and I suppose, you know, hoping that they'll then have the ownership of these seats when they're out there on the street.
It certainly creates, I think, a bigger job for whoever's going to be deciding when you look at who's dedicated, because while there's some eligibility criteria involved, it really does open up the scope to people from the past or our present community people who are helping to build our future and organisations.
That's right. There are more than five of those in the whole West, I can tell you now. I actually can't name anyone because I'm on the judging committee. But, you know, there are lots of, I mean, anyone who's lived around the Inner West as an LGBTI person can name lots of sporting organisations, social organisations, you know, businesses, commercial organisations, and then many, many, many individuals who've lived around these areas who've made a really big contribution. So it's going to be a hard task for us. It is.
Well, when people are thinking about whether or not they want to nominate someone or themselves or an organisation, I think it's also important to think about the personal impact that many people have within the communities that we have. It doesn't necessarily just need to be a big organisation that did this one thing, because there's lots of little people that have had big impacts for our communities.
There are. And, I mean, if you look historically, the very first woman who was the head of the New South Wales State Library was called Ida Leeson. She lived in this area in Leichhardt, and she was a lesbian. That is, you know, a long, long time ago. You know, there are people like her, you know, right through to Leichhardt Women's Centre, you know, who've done many things over many, many years. And then there are individuals. We've got lots of individuals who are very, very active in the marriage equality campaign in this area, who, you know, worked with all of the organisations, led lots of the organisations. So we're really hoping we get a really good cross-section of those people nominated.
And that's why we're putting the call out here tonight, because we do want people to be able to hear about it, know about it, and to be able to put a personal organisation forward that they feel is important or relevant enough to be able to be nominated and dedicated on one of the Pride seats.
That's great. And it'll be so exciting. And wouldn't it be good to have your name on that very pretty seat?
Nominations are currently open for the Pride seat dedications and will close on Sunday the 8th of July to coincide with Sydney Pride Festival. If you would like to know more information or nominate a person or organisation, then visit yoursayinnerwest.com.au/pride-seat-dedication. A link to this webpage will be up on the Informer's social media.
This is the Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Tom Morgan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.